Hi there. Welcome to The Signal. I'm Nicola Segan.
And I'm Josh Hoffman. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
Today on the show, out of control water bills.
I was informed of the fact that my usage of water had gone from 125 liters and had spiked to 10,000 liters.
This woman and dozens of others say Halifax Water has made a mistake. The Water Commission disagrees.
And we'll get an update on Westfor's attempts to get a blanket court injunction to keep protesters away from its logging sites around the province.
Plus, litter's been piling up during the pandemic.
If more people are picking up garbage than more people are littering, this problem is going to solve itself.
How two brothers are trying to inspire people to help.
And a new children's book that reflects Mi'kmaq people and culture.
I think that it's really important for their sense of identity to have a book that allows them to see themselves.
Plus, later, we'll visit the Oval and see whether changes to the booking system are getting more people out for a skate.
And we'll hear how some people are managing their pets' huge vet bills. All that and more on today's show.
But first, for two decades, successive Halifax councils have worked to cut the city's debt. Now, with some big bills on the horizon, Mayor Mike Savage says it's also time to start saving. Avery Mullen has that story.
Before the pandemic, Halifax's debt was lower than it had been in years. Less debt means lower property taxes and more money for services like transit. But the mayor says that's only half the battle. Now, it's time to save.
Just as a household, may you will have a mortgage and, you know, have other assets. It doesn't necessarily mean that you always pay off your mortgage at the expense of investing in other things that you need.
City councillors have rubber-stamped a new strategy. Starting with the 2021 budget, less money will be spent paying down debt and more will be saved for looming expenses. City staff estimate that Halifax needs to budget about $1.5 billion over the next 10 years just to pay for projects and initiatives already in the works, like the Integrated Mobility Plan and Rapid Transit. And even though municipal taxes are up a bit this year, the move could help keep them down in the longer term. That's because the savings will be invested, and the money earned will probably be more than the interest on the debt, according to Savage.
I think it's very similar to being, you know, somebody who has a mortgage who might be able to invest their money and get 8 or 9% when they're paying right now 2 or 3% on a mortgage.
Renaud Brassard is the interim Atlantic director for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. He says paying the debt and saving are both good options, and the city's plan is smart. But he does warn that the strategy is a bet on interest rates staying low so that debt stays cheap.
Let's not forget that all of these are assumptions. They're assumptions based on what the city thinks will be market conditions for the foreseeable future.
Most economists expect interest rates to stay low for several years. But as the economy recovers, that could eventually change. For The Signal, I'm Avery Mullen.
Some people in Halifax claim they're being grossly overcharged for water. One woman has been disputing her bill for over a year, and she says many others with high bills have reached out to her. But the Halifax Water Board says their meters don't make mistakes. Simon Smith has more.
A leaky faucet. A faulty toilet. A broken pipe. These are some of the reasons Halifax Water says its customers may receive an unusually high bill. Allie Feinberg's bill suggests she's used enough water to fill a tanker truck every day.
I was informed of the fact that my usage of water had gone from 125 liters and had spiked to 10,000 liters.
That was over a year ago. Feinberg's been disputing the bill ever since. She says there's no way she used that much water. She's even brought in multiple plumbers to check for leaks or faulty plumbing, and they agree.
There's no doubt in my mind that there's an error there somewhere, but I'm not sure where the error is.
Feinberg suggested that the issue could be related to her new meter, which was installed a couple of years ago. James Campbell says otherwise. He speaks for Halifax Water.
I can tell you that over the last 10 years, we're aware of, you know, two overbilling complaints that result of an error, and neither of which were a result of the meter.
Campbell says all complaints are investigated thoroughly through a regulated process. He added that there's been some misinformation about the new meters.
The term smart meter has been thrown around quite a few times. We actually don't have smart meters.
Campbell compares what the utility calls its positive displacement meters to a subway turnstile.
Turnstile doesn't register anything unless somebody passes through it.
After the water passes through the meter, Halifax Water can't track how it's used. Campbell says the best way for customers to avoid high bills is to sign up for the utility's Customer Connect portal to monitor their usage. But Feinberg isn't giving up. She's organized a group of more than 40 others who say they've received unusual bills.
I'm sort of a little bit of the ringleader here.
Before Thursday's meeting, the Halifax Water Board produced a report in response to complaints like Feinberg's. It hasn't yet been discussed by the committee. Feinberg says she'll keep fighting for herself and her community. For The Signal, I'm Simon Smith.
This week, the forestry company West 4 was back in court in Halifax. It's requesting an extension of the court injunction against the protesters who blockaded one of their logging roads in the fall. It says the order is necessary to prevent more blockades from popping up on their logging sites. But members of Extinction Rebellion Nova Scotia say this new order would be too broad and is an example of corporate overreach. Alex Johnson reports from outside the courthouse.
Because of COVID-19, there was limited space in the courtroom, but about 15 people still came from as far away as Yarmouth to register their concern about clear-cutting in Nova Scotia. They stood outside with signs. Inside, West 4 was asking for a new injunction to cover all the lands where they have permits for logging, not just where protesters had set up their blockades. Nina Newington was there. She was arrested at the blockade in Digby County in December for refusing to leave after West 4 got its first injunction.
If the court allows West 4 to have the kind of injunction that they're seeking, where they can basically tell anybody in the public that they cannot take direct action to protect moose anywhere that that consortium is licensed by the government, that's a massive assault on people's right to protect and restore nature.
Ian Dunbar is West 4's lawyer. He said if the injunction doesn't cover all their logging areas, they'll likely have more blockades to deal with. Dunbar also said protesters have other ways to express their concerns that won't damage West 4's business. James Gunvaldson-Clausen is one of the lawyers representing the protesters. He argued the blockades didn't cause West 4 the kind of serious harm that justifies an injunction. And he said, on the balance, logging in that area would hurt the endangered mainland moose far more than the blockades hurt West 4.
It's more important that these concerns be heard and addressed properly, finally, by the government of Nova Scotia, which to date has done almost nothing to protect the mainland moose in the area.
Newington knows the law is likely to side with West 4 in this case, but she says it's at least bringing more attention to the destruction of nature.
I'm 62 years old. I can't stand by and watch that. I can't be a part of it anymore. We need to take urgent action.
It's not clear when Justice Kevin Cody will release his decision on the injunction. For The Signal, I'm Alex Johnson.
The pandemic interrupted annual efforts to clean up litter across the province, but it inspired two brothers to get out and do something about the mess in their neighborhood. They want other Nova Scotians to do the same.
Tim Hart and his twin brother Tony are known as the Ditch Divers. They trudge through ditches near their hometown of Fall River and other parts of Nova Scotia, picking up litter. It all started when the two went on walks during the first COVID-19 lockdown last March and noticed how much garbage was laying around their neighborhood.
You know, we'd go out, maybe get one bag the first day, and, oh, that wasn't really that hard. Let's go out for, you know, a half hour, and let's go get two bags. And then it was, let's see if we can get 20 bags, and we'll stay out for 4 hours or 6 hours.
Tim Hart says they collected more than 150 bags of litter in 2 months last spring. He believes it's not up to organizations and governments to eradicate litter, but it's up to all of us. He says your phone tells you every week how much time you spend on it, and we should ask ourselves if we can spend more time doing something productive.
Even try and make a quarter of that picking up garbage. You know, if you can take 4 hours looking at Instagram in a week, try and make 1 hour a week of picking up garbage. And that's what I'm talking about, is that small effort. You know, it's 1 hour a week. If everybody does it, if more people are picking up garbage than more people are littering, this problem is going to solve itself.
Thousands of Nova Scotians volunteer every year to pick up litter across the province. According to Adopt a Highway, more than 14,000 people collected over 200,000 pounds of litter in the year before the pandemic struck. Program manager Amy Langell says COVID-19 has interrupted regular cleanup efforts.
So the amount of litter that was collected this year is significantly less than it would have been normally.
Langell says the pandemic has led to new forms of garbage on the ground, such as masks and gloves.
We've touched base with almost everybody, and everybody's saying they're looking forward to getting back in the 2021 spring cleanup season. So we're hoping that our numbers are quite high and that we do see an initial, say, burst of cleanups.
The majority of Adopt-a-Highway cleanups happen in the spring. Tim Hart and his brother Tony will be out there, and they hope to see you too.
Thanks, Josh. I've noticed more trash around too. Lots of masks.
They're everywhere.
That's why I have a reusable one. A Mi'kmaq author and illustrator from Millbrook First Nation released her first children's book this month. She says she hopes her book can contribute to a larger cultural revolution.
That's you, Mom.
Yeah, our moms, grams, and aunties.
Grandma.
Big grandma.
Nyanza Julian and her daughter Daisy are reading from Julian's new children's book. She started writing about her Mi'kmaq culture when the lobster fishing disputes were raging in Nova Scotia this past fall.
This was kind of my outlet to heal, in a sense. I used it a lot to just get my mind off of everything that was going on.
The end result was Come Walk With Me. Julian says she wove the story around the Mi'kmaq family and community structure. She focused on the value of elders and the importance of women as life givers. She illustrated the book herself and included depictions of around 30 people from her community of Millbrook First Nation throughout the pages. Most of them are children, like Daisy.
Mama?
That's you. Uncle Tom.
Yeah, our two-spirited. I think that it's really important for their sense of identity to have a book that allows them to see themselves or people they know.
Julian says growing up, she felt the lack of books that represented her culture. She hopes her book can fill this gap for Mi'kmaq children and help educate non-Indigenous children as well. Julian is studying education and hopes the book will be used in classrooms from primary to high school.
You can look at it in different perspectives and use it in different lessons to help decolonize the education process.
Rosalie Brooks also lives in Millbrook. She loves reading the book to her children.
It's a fantastic book that they can learn from, and they will always cherish knowing that they are all part of it.
Come Walk With Me is part of a larger movement across the country. Julian's publisher, Eagle Speaker Publishing, has now released books by more than 250 Indigenous authors. Julian says the reaction in her community is heartwarming.
That's kind of my payoff for everything, is seeing the excitement of everybody else. So overall, the book has already been successful for me.
Come Walk With Me by Nyanza Julian is available on Amazon.
Open a gift from the creator above.
What a great story, Nicola. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to The Signal on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax and at Signal HFX on Twitter. We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Josh Hoffman.
And I'm Nicola Sagan. Still to come on the show, scary vet bills can lead to some heartbreaking choices for pet owners.
Everyone in vet med is in it for the right reasons, and it's because they love animals. There's still a cost associated with healthcare.
And a slippery start to the skating season at the Oval.
But the system is not good at the Oval. That is ridiculous, frustrating, and it shouldn't be that way.
We'll find out whether new rules are getting more skaters on the ice.
Plus, from Celtic culture to glass fusing, we'll find out what you can get up to for fun in Halifax this weekend.
If you have a pet, you know that veterinary care is expensive. A simple checkup can be close to $100, while treatment for something like cancer can cost thousands. It leaves some pet owners looking for ways to cope with big vet bills. Preet Bogle has more.
Last summer, Corbin Parker and his fiancée Jillian got a Frenchie puppy and named it Fitz. Then they discovered Fitz had a congenital heart defect called pulmonic stenosis. The surgery to treat it cost over $6,000.
So that was a pretty hard pill to swallow. Both my fiancée Jill and I I'm finishing up law school. She just finished up law school. So we already had a mountain of debt that we're trying to get rid of, and we're certainly not pulling in any kind of a big income.
so they started a GoFundMe page to help. Ella Spencer is a veterinary technician in Halifax. She says it's not uncommon that people struggle to pay.
So we always try and get people to sort of reach out to, you know, friends and family. That's kind of our first suggestion is, do you have anyone you can contact to assist you with that?
If not, sometimes people surrender their pet to a shelter or even euthanize it. But Spencer says fundraising is happening more often.
But I would say the surrendering situation was probably once every few months. And then in general, clients not having money to pay the bill and having to fundraise was much more frequently, probably on a weekly basis.
She recommends pet insurance, but it's expensive and doesn't always cover the bills. For Fitz, it wouldn't have helped because his heart problem was a pre-existing condition. But the GoFundMe was a success for Fitz. He's a healthy and active puppy. He even has a new little brother, a golden retriever named Monroe. And the GoFundMe was such a success that Parker and his fiancée are using the extra money to start a fund at the Atlantic Veterinary Hospital called the Fitz Fund to help other pet owners who struggle to pay for vet care. I'm Preet Bogle with The Signal in Halifax.
More people will be able to enjoy Halifax's Emira Oval this weekend. Changes meant to make the Oval more available kicked in this week. That happened after complaints about the booking system people had to use to reserve a space on the ice. Anastasia Payne has that story.
Welcome to the Emira Oval.
Tanya McCollum's son has been begging to go skating at the Oval, just like they do every winter. Every Wednesday and Thursday morning since the Oval opened, she's tried to book a coveted weekend time slot for her family.
But the system is not good at the Oval. Like, you can't, that is ridiculous, frustrating, and it shouldn't be that way.
Sometimes the site would simply log her out. Every time, it wouldn't let her add family members to the booking. She called the Oval for help. They told her, it should work, try again.
There's no point of me going in there again and not being able to put my family members in there because they're all under my account.
Vanessa Forbes got a spot on Tuesday, but it wasn't easy.
It seems to fill up very quickly, like within minutes. You're not always guaranteed a spot.
Now the municipality has made some changes. People can only book 48 hours in advance. And the number of people allowed on the ice at once was raised from 140 to 240. This increase means skaters will have to wear a mask at all times. Forbes says the changes seem to be helping.
Tomorrow, there seemed to be more time to be able to book because of the increased capacity. So it does seem to be helping.
In other years, the Oval typically sees more than 10,000 people a week in January. So far this year, it's less than half of that. About 4,500 visitors a week, according to Maggie Jane Spray. She speaks for the municipality. She says staff will continue to work with public health to make adjustments to the number of skaters allowed at a time.
Hello, and thank you for calling the Halifax Regional Municipalities.
McCollum says each time she's used the Oval booking line, she spent at least 20 minutes on hold. But she says she'll try again and hope to soon be back on the ice. For The Signal, I'm Anastasia Payne.
The work week is finally coming to an end, so folks are maybe wondering what's on the go this weekend.
It would be great to get out for some fun.
Well, you're in luck, Nicola, because Michael Chubbs is here to give us the scoop on what's up this weekend in Halifax.
Tonight, Blues fans can catch Andrew Gillis and the Shownuffs at Barely's House of Blues and Ribs. They take the stage at 7:30. You just need a craving for rhythm and a $5 bill to get in. Or, Fleetwood Mac fans, get ready to tease up your hair and pin up your ponytail. The Fleetwood Mac tribute band Gypsy will be covering your favorite Mac tracks at Dartmouth's Parkside Pub and Steakhouse. That's tomorrow night. Get your tickets at Eventbrite or Parkside. Show starts at 7:30. But if you're looking for something more hands-on, Cranberry Stained Glass Studio and Supply is offering a beginner's glass fusing course that runs over the next 3 Sundays. Lori Nason is Cranberry's president.
I've been fusing for probably close to 25 years now, and I feel that there's a lot of chemistry and physics that goes into fusing that you really have to learn over the years. And my experiences have brought me a long way with what we cover in our courses.
Glass using is the process of melting layers of glass together and forming them into various projects and sculptures. And while the course is no cakewalk, students leave with between 6 and 8 different projects.
One of them will be a good size project that you pick yourself through my careful guidance, as well as a teaching project which involves color theory, full fusing, blocking colors, cold working, and slumping, which are all different processes in fusing that manipulate the glass so that you can actually shape it into three-dimensional projects that you can use in your day-to-day life.
For more information about Lori's Fusion 101 class, you can go to cranberrystainglass.com. Also this weekend, the Celtic Cultural Society of Nova Scotia presents the Halifax Celtic Festival. It's a virtual festival on until Sunday. Rick Grant is the president of the society.
The Celtic Cultural Society of Nova Scotia is a nonprofit society, number one. And secondly, every festival is free. So since we started in 2013, all our festivals have been free festivals, no admission charged at all.
The free festival deals with all aspects of Celtic culture and celebrates the 7 recognized Celtic nations. This evening, starting at 6:30, you can log on to the virtual event space and see performances from the likes of Evans and Doherty and the Doucette sisters. Tomorrow is Celtic Family Day.
On Saturday, we concentrate on our youth again, but with children. And we still have youth performing and in various aspects, dance or singing or whatever. And we have performances in Gaelic and Welsh and Irish, of course. But we have people that everyone know, like Roger Stone and people like that. In the afternoon, we have a major concentration on children.
The festival ends with Celtic Sunday and features performances from Union Fire Club Pipes and Drums, Dartmouth and District's Pipe Band School, and many more. To get this festival's full lineup, check out hfxcelticfest.ca. Well, that's what's up this weekend. For The Signal, I'm Michael Chubbs.
Cold over here.
Oh, the summer time is coming. And the trees are sweetly blooming. And the wild mountain grows around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme all around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? I will build my love a bower near yon pure crystal fountain, and on it all the flowers of the mountain. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme all around the blue. Will you go, lassie, go?
If my true love, she were gone, then I'd surely find another to pull up wild mountain time all around.
will you go, lassie? Lassie, will you go? And we all go together to talk wild the mountain time all around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie? Go. Oh, the summer and the trees are sweetly blooming, and the wild mountain thyme grows around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go to block wild mountain time all around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie? Go.
That's Evans and Doherty with Wild Mountain Time.
They're pretty hopeful about summer coming for the end of January.
Well, maybe we'll get an early spring.
On a chilly January night, maybe you're putting together some snacks for a Netflix binge. Maybe some guac and chips. Well, avocados definitely aren't just for guacamole anymore. Maybe it was the advent of avocado toast, but the fruit is enjoying a surge in popularity that's also being felt in Halifax. Raghu Para has more.
The avocado thing has been very important to us lately.
Demo Georgia Cacao says including burritos and tacos with guacamole was a game changer for his business. His family has run Halifax's Gus's Pub for 60 years. He says he was looking for something to make up for being unable to host live events, including Super Bowl parties.
Oh, yeah. The Mexican thing was sort of a response to the COVID. We weren't bringing any sales in.
He says avocados are becoming more mainstream now, even though they come up with some issues.
With avocados, it's a challenge to get them at a good price and then to use them. Because a lot of times, if we can't use them, they go to waste. And that's an issue.
Georgia Cacos tried frozen avocados to work around this, but he switched back to fresh ones to meet the customers' growing demand for taste and health. The Mexican Association of Avocado Producers recently said they're going to ship more avocados this year than they did last year. Silva Shalabova researches food distribution and policy at Dalhousie University. He says the trend is partly about avocados' versatility.
Avocado has developed some currency across the three-meal institution, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
He says avocados are now widely used in smoothies, toasts, and in vegan and ketogenic diets.
I just think that people are interested in the product. They know what to do with it.
According to the Nielsen Company that does global market research, avocado sales in Canada are up 10% over 2019. Shalabuva says Canada's strong dollar means prices should stay steady and the demand will continue. For Georgia Cacos, it's meant some new food ideas that help bring in more revenue during a critical time. For The Signal, I'm Raghu Para.
That's our show for today.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is SignalHFX.
Thanks to our social media editors, Avery Mullen and Preet Bogle.
And to our technician, Mark Pinio.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm Josh Hoffman.
And I'm Nicholas Egan. We'll be back next week with more stories. Have a great weekend.